Accession number 11106, Mr. T. Wilson, Reel 15.
Mr. T. Wilson, Reel 15. You were 10 days on the train, Mr. Wilson. Were you never let off at all over that 10-day period?
No, there was no one let off at all, because if it didn't take 10 days for to get to the place we were going to, we were shoved inside for maybe 6 hours or so, until there was guards shoved round, but there was nobody let off from getting on at Athens. When we got to, I think it would be somewhere in Poland. I couldn't tell you the actual place where we stopped at in Poland or got at in Poland.
How were you fed over the course of the journey?
Well, there's bits of black, they were shooting black bread, you know. Well, I mean, you organise everything in groups of 5 or 10, and they say that between 60 or that between 70, and we just shoved through, and no water, that was all. But there was no special meat times or nothing. If you got some, you got some. If you didn't, you didn't.
And you had to do without, of course, if you didn't get it.
You just like a parcel being sent on the railway. You're shooting the truck and you got your destination. They'll look for you. They'll look for it. As a matter of fact, you'd set worse than that, because when it comes to the train part, there'd be a big bucket in the corner. And that was emptied now and again, but not very often. If a fella was sick, he just stayed sick. And if he's dead, he just lay dead. There's not such a thing of cleaning it out and things like that. Oh, it was horrible. But as a matter of fact, I just fell on the ground when I got out, and I think quite a few more with it in the daylight and in the eyes, and because you were. Well, it had a horrible feeling on you. I know in the truck you moved about, but soon you hit the daylight, something came over you that had knocked you out.
Did you try, or did people try to object to the Germans because of this treatment?
No objection at all. You could shout as much as I, but believe me, no. None at all, because them type of Germans were different to ones with the fighting force, you know, the fighting force. These are the ones that think that they think. Well, they thought they owned the world. They had that attitude that they were right and everything. And if they told you to move, you had to move. They had an end. But we'd be sent there, say, right, the train and arrive at so-and-so. Well, there'd be guards ready for the accepting, you know, if they're going to stay there for about 6 hours, and they patrol around it, because quite a few blokes, well, one in the old truck, but we heard there's a crack later on that the try for the get a, you know, break away to the woodwork and at the fabric of the floor, and if we pull in to a side and they got the chance, they'll be off. I don't know if anybody was successful, but with mentions, a couple of fellas on the whole journey. Tried, not in our truck, I mean, not in the truck behind us, but in one of the trucks. Well, then you didn't know where you were, anyhow.
Did it affect your health, the 10 days that you was?
Yes, well, as I said, when they opened the door and let me out, I just rolled out and fell on the ground and had to pick myself up. Oh, you were weak, all right, but you won't. What keeps you alive? You're bewildered what's going to happen next. You know, the such a thing can't go on forever. I mean, and it's new to me to think, well, such a thing didn't exist. But it gives you that energy that sometime this will stop. Because it can't go on forever. Not that kind of treatment. They probably was done later on in camps and things like that. Well, as we all know, what they done to the political prisoners and things like that.
When you got to the end of your journey, you say you'd reached Poland.
Uh-huh.
What did they do with you then as you got when you got off the train?
Well, we got off the train, we're moving into a type of camp, and then everybody was listed again, and then daily and things like that, different messages come through. I was stationed there, NCOs, and men were all together, and they were having the men separated. They were the men, like the ordinary private, had no other choice but go to work in the working camp. They had no other choice, the ordinary private. And the NCOs, well, if they wanted, they could go. But with the Geneva Convention, the ranks of sergeant, no. We be sergeant were and same those same NCOs, like from over the different groups. We says no all the time. But the private thing had no other choice. He just allocated them a certain area and things like, well, we never saw him again. Or he went to another camp where they beat, there was what they call Stalag 10B or something. We never got to, but we went to an NCO's camp, Stalag 357. And it took about 2 or 3 days, they got sort of where they wanted to get the best one out of it, and if the fellow would want the arm, well and good, but...
When you first got off the train, before we get to those situations, did they give you a medical and give you a chance to get cleaned up when you got off the train and went to your first camp?
No, not straight away, no. Well, I can't remember, really.
Were you photographed or anything of that?
No, that came later on. You were photographed later on, maybe about 6 or 7 days or 5 days later on, but not as soon as you got off, because I had to sort out where they wanted which. Oh, they would photograph you singly. Everybody was photographed singly, and then a little metal disc with a number on.
Was there anything else that happened to you when you first arrived?
Well, you're just all more or less in a group, and you don't know what, you really didn't know what was happening. You see, right, until they got them, as I say, sorted out where they wanted to chat for working parties and what camp they wanted to go to, and those who won the Geneva Convention stuck it out to go to what they call the NCO, non-working camp.
So how long were you in that first camp as you were being sorted out?
I would say no more than a week, 8, 9 days.
And then you moved on from there?
We moved on from there.
The camp you went to, what was the accommodation that you were put into?
Well, there were huts, you know. We termed it the countryside, which was like all forest. There's a lot of camps within those forests. And the barbed wire around, there must have had thousands made them, things like that. I mean, we only saw the one, but there must have been thousands in different areas like that. And there was already camps, and then as regards the bed, well, there was like a three-tier, bottom, middle, and the top, all one structure, and about six different apartments, in, you know, see? And that's all there was. And about one blanket, I think, to sleep on. Well, they got organised, and your own NCOs, senior NCOs, would list your names, who had them in that group, and who had them in that group. It's more or less back to partly middle to the discipline again. But, you know, for our own organisation, to see who was who, and that we were kept right as we could. There wasn't much chance of that, but because I remember the Red Cross fellow visitors, and I was in KD shorts and shirt. That's the dress when you're in the Middle East. And he says, "All you got, sergeant?" That's all I mean, standing, and we're getting cold weather there compared to what we'd been. And that's the first time I ever saw a bottle dress. He got me a pair of boots, and well, he didn't get it, but I was down for the receive. That's the first time I ever seen a bottle dress. Not me when 43, back end of 43, something like that.
So you were given the winter clothing, in effect?
Yes.
Was this British winter clothing? Was it British battle dress?
Yes, oh yes, it was British battle dress and overcoat. Because later on, the cold weather did really come on to you.
And this had been supplied through the Red Cross?
Through the Red Cross, definitely. It's not been by the Red Cross, I think Garvey fellows was finished. Because there were camps where you got red, what we call Red Cross food parcels. And they were really responsible for keeping a lot of fellows alive, including myself.
What did you receive in the parcels?
Well, in the parcel there was... there'd be some coffee, some tinned meat, a bar of chocolate, which was what they call a special blended chocolate or something, because if you just needed eat a couple of little bits of that chocolate, then you felt as though you could run a mile, you know, it'd give you that energy straight away for all you were probably weak. But that chocolate, what they call a special blended, was mine. There's no getting away from it. Then there's maybe a bit flavoured onion salt and things like that. That's a standard procedure, what was in every Red Cross parcel. Would last you a week or a fortnight. Could last you a month, really, if you're spared. But if you're getting them on a regular basis, maybe it's once a week or once a fortnight, which you knew what would come to the camp when they're getting them. Say, well, I've got the last a week, or it'll be a fortnight before you get another one. Well, you spun it out.
And were these parcels to you individually or as a group?
Individually. Every man got the parcel to himself. And then there were certain ones, I'd say there's about five of us in one group. No, we used to share ours. There were cigarettes and tobacco in them as well. We used to, because five together lasted a bit longer than one on his own. You know, and five your own regiment. Because there's all sorts of different regiments and single-A's as well, and artillery, air force, royal engineers, you know, from all over when it comes to the terms of what they call the NCO's camp. And there's some clever fellas in it too.
Did you use the food that you were getting in parcels for any form of barter with the Germans?
Well, that come later on, really. When... not with the Germans. No, no. It could be done for the get a loaf and things like that. Well, the fellas would, say the packet of prunes, take the prunes out and get store in and seal it again and put two or three prunes on the top. And on the night time, sling it over the white of the sentry. Until they got wise of it. Or same as a cigarette packet. The fellas, if they'd been in there for a while, could open it. Take the cigarettes out and pull the other in and make the same weight on as though really you couldn't tell the difference when you start to open it. There was a lot of tricks like that done with them, but they didn't work for very long, because once the fellow was took down, he couldn't complain to anybody, but he could complain to his mates for being relieving him and things like that, you know, and what they expect, so it wore out in time.
Did you get any opportunity to be near or mix with the civilians in the area?
Never. Never whatsoever. Never seen no civilians like in that NCO camp. We never seen no civilians whatsoever. The only civilians we had ever saw would be the chaps coming in for them be the latrines, the big long latrines about 25 yards long and things like that. And they said just pump the refuge out there. That would be the only civilian you'd ever see.
To keep to the food for the moment, what food were you receiving in the normal way through the Germans, normal meals?
Well, black bread, we call it brown bread, with black bread, you get allowed a certain amount for five or six between you. And then there was what they call vegetable soup. Well, it was only like turnip tops and things like that. It wasn't really. It was hot, and that was all. But the guard food from them would never. No, nothing at all.
So, is it true to say then you've been in a pretty permanent state of being hungry all the time?
Yes. I'll tell you, when you get, we did get a parcel, and you took maybe 2 squares or 1 square because you rushed yourself out, you felt as though you could do those little yards. You know, you had that feeling that you that gave that energy, because my whoever thought of it must have been very clever. And the rest of the food parcel was calculated out, you know, in its little different ways, because it was called Nescafe, the coffee. I've never seen coffee ever since. I've seen different brands of coffee, what they've been advertising, and I said to myself, well, I don't know if that we were, you know, like losing the taste of decent stuff. But the record parcels were really thought out for the keeper alive. If you got one a month, you still survive. Easy. One would last you a month. It wouldn't last you fully a month, but you'll still be alive at the end of the month and keep them going. As I said before, it wouldn't be for them. Not a fellow's been dead.
Were the Germans eating any better, do you know? The guards, were they eating
We never saw any, never saw them go to any meals anywhere. We never went in contact with them at all. All when they were guarding the area, then they would change over. That's all. We never seen any of their routine.
What effect was the poor food and the small quantities having on your health?
Well, it did weaken you. There's no getting away from it. But it was gradually weakening you. And you couldn't feel it, but everybody was the same, and you say, well, we're on the same boat together, more or less. See? It wasn't all, just one bloke was away, like fading away and things like that. You're all weakening down at the time, but you kept your spirits up. Some people would, well, there's some clever chaps, as I said, from different regiments and places like that. One chap was a music teacher. And he said, well, I'll start teaching, learn to read music, you know. I'll learn to read music and read and write music. It's interesting. Someone be good at something else and pass it half an hour away and things like that amongst yourselves. You do organise the human instinct, they tell you when you've got a common sense that you've got to do such things.
So some men were in effect running classes?
Oh yes. Yes, some of them quite, some fellows.
What ones were you in, did you involve yourself in?
I always liked music, so I said, well, I can play my ear. They won't like go and type melodies and things like that, and those organ things. And I said, well, I'll pass my time with writing and reading the music and writing, but I don't think we succeeded in getting to the end of it. We got a slight knowledge of it, then something else broke up.
Did you get the opportunity of having musical instruments brought to you through the Red Cross?
Some must have had some, because the music in the camp. I know they got them, but, they formed a bit of an orchestra, I should think. Yes, there was. There must have been somewhere where there were the records that supplied them were that camp a certain few items, and then another one a certain few items.
Did you put on shows, theatrical shows?
The laddies did. They tried. As a matter of fact, the German officers would be sitting in front, and all the lads and the boys would be acting, singing some acting female part. Well. And some chaps were real good at it, you know, and not only that, some of the fellows had been things in civilian life as well. I mean, you've got a real cross-section of people. I mean, every word and morning was just like not only private or sergeant, you'd had a career before you joined up. And some kept it going. If a fellow was a singer, he'd start and sing. The fellow would write songs, he'd make songs up. For all they might have been nothing, but kept him going to what his intentions were later life. It would have to come that way. And then the chaps would make different things out of the tin and things like, you know, the tin, because nothing wasted out of your record parcel. The string, the cardboard, and It was done for decorative purposes or thing like that. And the tins were made out of little vessels for the eating on. Some chaps made clocks out of them, you know, cut the clock, thing like that. Oh, there's quite a lot of things to be done. It's surprising what you can do when you're isolated like that. But it's a horrible feeling to be isolated. Oh, no.
Who looks after the medical side in the camp?
Well, the medical orders yourself, amongst them, chap who had the military experience in the medical orderlies, they would be assigned what to do with that. And then there'd be a German MO or something like that. But there was not like no British officers like that. No, no. Sergeant Major or RSM, that was about the highest rank or equipment with the Air Force and things like that. But such a lieutenant, so it didn't matter what regiment or what, they were in the officers' camp.
You mentioned that a discipline was formed within...
Oh, yes, it had to be.
How was that? Who, in effect, was the... Or who were the disciplinary people in the camp?
Well, the senior sergeants, or CSMs, or what they call the colour sergeants, or chapter being RSM.
Do you recall the names of any of these people?
No, I really can't, no. I can only recall the names of the... my little group of fellas, what were more or less made it up together for the own regiment. Oh, there's quite a lot of fellas, but every we organise yourself down to that. The senior chaps who were responsible for that certain right room.
Was this like a kind of a controlling committee of senior sergeants, or was there one person with others working for him or under him?
Well, each room, when they were the senior ranker, would be in charge of that room, more or less. And then he'd report to another one when necessary, because all the chaps in the what was in charge of those didn't just go to the same rooms. It would end up with one fella representing number one, or number two would want a ration, number one or five would want some wood for the keep the fire going, and they got, you know. He would keep in charge. It was like different branches, and they let the one man representing for the present the cases to the Germans.
And that was how contact was made with the Germans, through your senior ranks?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Did they comply? Were you getting the things that you wanted?
No, not always. No. Well, I mean, no one in England, he'd want the moon if he could get it, but you could fox them and things like that. They could be foxed. As a matter of fact, later on, as I tell you, with intelligence sort of people like in the NCO's camp, they'd make uniforms and things like that. There's what they call a skate committee and things like that. Or the barber, you know, chaps from the barber shop where they keep your hair cut and things like that.
The escape committee, how was it functioning? What kind of things was it doing?
And then we're involved, not inside the camp. You know, we heard if it required before you vetted and by your own fellas, and never mind anything, before you could get anywhere near it. But if there was a fella definitely desired that he was going to get out there and then, he'd be helped, if possible.
So did he present his escape idea to... The committee?
No, not the committee. They'd be seen, you went to two or three channels before you ever seen whose committee. It was only like a rumour to somebody else, and that rumour was extended to somebody else, and the rumour was extended that might have been believed until it was found out it was really serious. Oh no, you just come on, go up to the committee, I want to escape. No, no. Because, I mean, word might get out, the lads had it. No, that was a real close guarded secret.
Have you any knowledge of different attempts to escape whilst you were there?
No, I've heard two or three times the wire, well, what they call the wire, and if two or three shots have gone off, I say, oh, well, that's some poor devil trying it. Or maybe he's trying it on his own, and things like that. They did try to organise a bit tunnel and things like that, but it was all the time. But it never come to really much. They were told in the camp we were in, my idea was, once you're inside that wire, you're wasting your time trying to get out. You've got to wait till the opportunity knocks for it to escape. You're not. Really did later on when the fourth, when the fourth march.
Before that, whilst you're in this camp, you did say the name of the camp and the number. What was it?
Stallard 357. That was an NCO's non-working camp.
You've mentioned theatres and getting involved with classes of one kind and another. What other forms of leisure had you?
Well, you'd normally play a bit of football amongst yourselves, or run around the camp area where you were permitted for the run round, or try and keep yourself fit if possible, things like that. Or you get two fellas playing table tennis, and no table, no nothing there, just to make believe empty space. But they imagine that there was a table in front of them and had a batter piece, and the ball was keep bouncing about, and all you could see was just the two antics, what they were doing, which kept the mind right. You can see two villagers just over playing table, you know, just like, and there was nothing there, just an open space. There would be ten, and there was a table in front of them.
How important was humour within your own, within the camp?
Well, it was quite good, but the Frenchman single eve next to me. Well, I mean, Sydney, me, well, I passed the time with him, tried a bit French for him or whatever he speak, and I was a bit English, and it made it more interesting. But the lads kept the spirit quite well, there's no getting away from it. Oh, yes, the raid never go at any time when something's knocked, but you had no chance to get it when you really run around that way, because there wasn't only one wire. And not only that, that's the old map's idea. Be all right if you knew the area of the place you're in, like you were when you're home, you say, well, that's Newcastle, and far there's another place, and far there's another place. Once you get out the way, where are you? Eh? You've got to have a knowledge of when you've got to get out of it.
Can you describe the layout of the camp?
Well, it's more or less like north and south, you know, lines of huts and lines and lines and lines, and quite a lot of them. They were all wooden huts. They were all about 30 or 40 people. And every morning there'd be a roll call.
Was there this a roll call outside your hut, or did you all come together into a large space?
All come together in a large space.
Parade ground type of?
That's right, parade ground. And everybody had to be hunted for. And that means you'll say, right, there's 500 now, there's sufficient for 500 rations. What was termed as 500 rations, that camp would be issued with.
How was that organised? How was your actual eating organised? Was it in your huts, or was there some dining hall? Or?
No dining hall at all. You used to make a little attraction, a little, what they call a blower, where, like a base for a fire, and a wheel, and a little fan inside of them, but to turn it on for the blow wind up to make a fuel burn, what they call the blower. Well, you pass yourself away, time away, a week or two, well, you made one of those little things, because it would burn bits of twigs or anything. Once you start forcing the wind through a little tunnel into a combined space. Some of the chaps were clever. You could see the electric lights. Oh, there were electric lights in them, and the electric lights were dipping. Well, they were clever. They could boil the water in 2 seconds, but it was risky. But they were doing it when it was being a window in the cold. But that experience as regard that electricians and that.
Like a mini electric fire, electric heater.
And, you know, they connect the wires from the circuit. And they boil a can of water, but what kind type of can they had for water. For as long as you've got water boiling, well, if you had tea or coffee or cocoa, well, you had something for to start the day off with. we didn't well, you just done without.
Where did you get your fuel from for fires, whether it be wood or whatever it was?
Well, so, as I said, when in the forest area, there'd be maybe six fellas from one hut, six fellas from another hut. They'd be taken out of the party, and they'd bring so much wood back. And all the wood would be put together, put the wood back, then would be distributed, you know, that number one hut, number two hut, number three hut, and things like that. You didn't get out every week. Oh no, they just when they set so that number different number boats be going to four men for you to go. Well, the chap in charge of it would organise his four, and you could give you a break really. I was only out once, I think. I got out once when I call a collecting fuel party for wood, but when they brought it back, it was all put together. It was divided about the whole camp, all this thing.
So you got the fuel, and on the morning you had your roll call, and on the basis of the roll call, you were given a supply of food that day.
Uh-huh.
And then this was heated in whatever way you could devise.
Well, some huts had a stove in, and you could gandy on the stove with mess tin here and a bit tin here and a bit tin there, and there was never no saving. That's one I can honestly say. You could, there might be